The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, this is part two of the BS Report with Louis C.K. If you missed part one, check it out on ESPN.com's Pod Center or iTunes. How does it feel being split into a part two?
It's really exciting. It was a little scary, but I feel good.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got together through this. Thank you.
Did you have other people then see that and say, hey, you know, I'm available for so-and-so?
Well, Chris has been on the show, Chris Rock. He's been on the Dane.
He's your friend, though.
Yeah, Joan Rivers is on the show.
But nobody's ever approached you.
I have. I've gotten emails and stuff from people saying this famous person has agreed to be on the show.
Mr. Gibson has agreed to be on the show.
Who knows that you'll be delighted to have him. No, I've gotten emails from people asking to be on and stuff. But
the Chris Rock thing was really interesting to me because it seemed like you intentionally and willfully wanted to make him seem totally normal. Guy at home.
Yes, that's what it is.
Not cracking jokes.
No.
Taking shit from his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That's what you wanted. Because when I saw him, I was like, oh, this is cool. Chris Rock's going to be Chris Rock. I was like, oh, yeah, no, he's going to be Family Guy Chris Rock.
Yeah, no, the reason I used him wasn't because of his funny chops. It was because of his drama chops. When Chris just acts like a drama actor, he can actually do it.
Yeah.
And he was in a play at the time. I don't know what you could say on this show, but it was called Mother with a Hat. That was the name of the play.
Can bleep it.
It was a great Broadway play. And so he was in it, and I never saw him act like that. And he played this really serious guy who brought the word down to people. So I just thought, geez, he's really good at that.
And so you think...
Also, Chris, that's our relationship. He gives me a lot of wake-up calls. There's a lot of times I call Chris, and he says, what are you doing? And he talks sense into me. He's that friend for me. So I just gave him the part of what he does in my life, usually.
So you think that he could actually, if he had wanted to, done like the real acting thing?
He's still very much good. He's a young man, and he's in good shape, and he's works very hard. I think Chris will probably surprise people with some great... I don't think that his intention has come from the best place for him creatively in the other movies he's done. I think there's going to be a movie with Chris in it that he's acting in, that it's going to, people are going to go, that was so great. I know Chris can do that. I've directed him in a couple of things, and I know a person can get Chris to a place where he turns in great shit.
So maybe you need to add him to the cast.
Yeah. I probably will have him on again. I think I'll probably have him on again. He does really great work when he's in the right place. And
I have to admit,
so far, unfortunately, all he's doing is turning out amazing comedy specials, selling out giant theaters, and doing, you know, he's got his series that he did on UPN, you know, all this, you know, he does stuff. And
when I was doing documentaries.
Yeah, he does documentaries. I mean, Chris has several abilities that he's one of the smartest people I know, and he's also one of the more generous and good people I know.
When you obviously knew him in the mid-90s when that comedy special took off.
Yeah.
And it was really like a force of nature. I mean, and it was right when the internet was starting, but not, you know, it was really
pretty
early. Like, did you see that coming? I know you were involved, like, and it,
I wasn't involved at all.
You weren't involved in that special at all?
No.
You were involved in the second one?
I never worked for Chris as a comedy, as a stand-up writer. That was all his own thing. I wrote in his show on the Chris Rock show on HBO. But I knew Chris when he was a young comic, and I was. And then he went to SNL, and, you know, when SNL is like a other world. Like if you live in New York, people that go to SNL, you just don't see him anymore when they work there. And Chris didn't, you know, he struggled at SNL.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything that was his greatest move. Just didn't happen.
Yeah.
But he, again, he's a beacon for me because he failed at SNL, really did fail. And then he left, and then it was like, goodbye, Chris Rock is gone.
He had that one cup of coffee in Living Color, I think.
Yeah, a little tiny right before it got canceled.
A little quick espresso.
Yeah. And then he's gone.
Yeah.
So where'd he go? He was on the road, just doing thankless difficult road gigs and making himself a better stand-up than he was before SNL. Before SNL, he was that Arsenio Hall. He did like this, and he'd throw the mic down, and he'd do his jokes, and he had like these little 10-minute spots. And then he went on the road, and nobody saw him anymore. He wasn't getting a new gig or taking a meeting. He was just getting good, really, really good. And then I remember really well that somebody said, hey, Chris is headlining at Caroline's in New York, the comedy club. And I'd never seen him do a whole hour of stand-up, like a whole headlining set. So me and some comedians went to the club to watch him, and he'd come back to New York to headline Caroline's, and he was getting ready for his special. And so we go in and we watch him, and he was so much better than all of us, better than everybody. Like, we were all hanging around New York telling weird jokes for 20 minutes at a time and complaining about our managers and going to diners, you know. We were just in a holding pattern. Nobody was trying to get great at being a comedian. They were just being the comedian we were, you know. And here comes Chris, and he's phenomenal. Like, he's, and I was like, I forgot this is a thing that matters that I do. At the end of the show, people were on their feet.
Yeah.
And every comedian was like this, you know, leaning on their elbows and like, that, like the close-up pictures of the losing team at the World Series. That's what it looked like. You know when they do those close-ups of the watery eyes?
Yeah.
And the guy just staring at the field.
Just wondering what happened.
Yeah, just
resentful.
Going over his,
yeah.
What am I going to say? How am I going to go home? I hope I'm not going to hit somebody when I go home. All these feelings. That all the comedians were sitting there like that. Like I was doing, I've been wasting, a good five years I've been wasting. And then he went on and did that special, and it was just like this blowback, like, oh, my God, he's just so goddamn good.
So when did you get to the point where you, you know, struggling to get better, make a living, figure out how to deal with hecklers, like a million things to, all right, I'm good at this, now I'm going to be, try to be great at this?
Well, that, I mean, that was when I saw him do that. That was a big deal. I was writing for TV then, so I was a little more focused on that.
Yeah.
But I started going back out to clubs again. And then my life changed in its own way. I had kids, and I grew up also. So I just thought, you know, everybody grows up at a different time.
Yeah.
I grew up when I had kids and started really thinking about stand-up. When I had kids, it made a big difference for me because when I went out to do a set, it wasn't also it wasn't a social event. It was until that point. You just go to the Comedy Cellar, have a falafel at the comedy table, run down and do your set. Bullshit with some comics. It was a lot of wasting time.
Yeah.
And it didn't really matter how the set went. That was just the job. I'm just going to go on and do my time, tell the same jokes, maybe do one new joke. But now it's like I've got kids, and getting out of the house is a big deal. I can do a set tonight, and I ain't wasting any time. I got a list of stuff I want to try. I want to make sure that this set makes me better. I started to think every set I do has to make me a better comic.
When did you make the decision that every year – I'm dumping that material and doing new material?
2005, I think. I did a half-hour special in 2004 for HBO.
Yeah.
And it was all this new stuff I'd been doing about kids and being married. And then I did Lucky Louie, and we shot the whole season, and we were done in March, I think, and we weren't going to be on the air till September. We had a whole summer and spring to wait before we even went on the air.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't certainly renew us till we'd been on the air and succeeded or whatever. So I asked HBO to give me an hour. I said, please, I got them to promise me an hour special in November. And so I went on the road and thought, I'm going to try to write an hour of new material. And all I thought was, I'm going to do 1 hour special, and either I'll get my show picked up, and then I won't ever get to do it again. That'll be the kind of the end of my stand-up career, I thought.
Yeah.
I thought if Lucky Louie went 2 seasons, it would have gone 10. So while I'm still a comic, I'm going to just, I always wanted to do an hour like Chris did.
Yeah.
So I went on the road. I did shitty clubs for the whole spring and summer, and I built an hour. And then Lucky Louie got canceled. And they let me keep the hour. They let me still do the hour. God bless them. And I did this hour called Shameless.
Yeah.
And it's the smartest thing I ever did in the world because I needed something because my show was gone. And I did Shameless, and it really made it. It was the first thing that the next after Shameless aired, I had a club date in Philadelphia, and I found out we sold out like a month ahead of time. I had never sold out a club like that. And all of a sudden, I was putting tickets on sale, and people were buying them. That was the first time. And I thought, well, are they going to see Shameless? And I thought, I just did this thing of starting with nothing and building an hour from scratch and shooting it at the end of the year. I did it. I can do that. That's something I know how to do. And I thought, and you know what? It wasn't that good. I could do that better. And I decided, why keep doing that material now? Throw it away. I'm going to do that again. And I did it again. The next year I shot Shoot Up. And my life kept changing. I got divorced after Shoot Up, so now I had a whole new, different kind of material. Yeah. And then I did different it again. Thing. I did Hilarious. And then I got the show. So the next 2 hours went into the series.
Because I remember when Jerry Seinfeld, when the gimmick of comedian was, Jerry's not doing his material anymore. He's going to try to do new material.
Yeah.
And now you're like, every year I'm going to do a new hour.
Mm-hmm.
What's the over-under on you being able to keep this up? Like 2014? Every year you're going to do this?
Sure. It's like writing a book. If you write a book, you don't keep writing the same book. It's not like Mark Twain wrote Huckleberry Finn and people loved it, so he said, I'm going to write Huckleberry Finn again.
Right.
He just keeps writing it. It makes no sense. It's just all in your head. It's what you decide is your demand. You just decide that's how much material I need to write. And you write.
So you never get worried about tapping out?
Yeah, of course. I'm terrified it's happening out.
Yeah.
But that's a motivating fear. That's pressure.
Yeah.
I like pressure. I learned that from Billie Jean King.
Billie Jean King?
One of my heroes. Yes.
Really?
Yes. I remember as a kid watching a press conference with Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs when they were doing the Battle of the Sexes. I was so fascinated by that because I was raised by a single mom and I have 3 older sisters. So I've always identified with women taking care of shit, and I've never saw women as weak. I only ever knew my strong, working, single mother. So watching Billie Jean King field this horrible, just misogyny was fascinating because the way she carried it. Yeah. That's what made it work. Because he would sit there going, why don't you all get back in the kitchen? And
that's right. I forgot
it was
that.
Amazing. The women, he'd have 2 girls in bikinis with big tits. I mean, there's no bigger insult to a working, woman than chicks with tits. And he'd sit there and he'd go, this is what a woman is. What's your problem or whatever? And the way she carried it was it was amazing. She didn't sit there and turn red and be like Wilma and get angry. She just sat there like this. And then they asked her, how do you feel when he says all this? And she smiled and she said, all it does is put a lot of pressure on me. And I love pressure. And she had this big smile on her face. She said, I love pressure. And I thought, I never forgot it. I thought, oh, my God, how do you love? What does that mean? Like, I thought really carefully about that. She really did. She was like, come on, keep it coming. I love it. I love it. I want this pressure because she knows how to turn pressure into hard work. She knows how to, it motivates her.
Yeah.
She knows that the heat from pressure is going to make her work harder. So she's like, go ahead. The more he said, the more she had to win. There's no way. She had so much to lose that she knew she'd play better. So that's the way I do it. I think, like I say out loud, I'll never do the same hour in a year. And then inside I'm going,
God, why did I say that?
Why did I say that? And then it pushes me. Same thing with this special.
Yeah.
I went on Conan. I mean, it was like a thing. I just said it out loud. I said, I'm doing a special. You can only see it on my website. And then I was like, oh, man. Comedy Central would
make
good coin for this. And then I had to make it make sense. I had to, like going into Landgraf's office and saying, I'll do this show for nothing. It'll be great. And then, keeping the, all the things that I do are hard. They're a harder version.
Well, but how old's your oldest daughter?
9.
Well, see, at least now, 6. When they turn 12,
mm-hmm.
Now you have 5 more years of material. You'll have a new hour every year.
Yes. Well, my kids
because they'll suddenly hate you.
Yeah, that's right.
I have a 6-year-old daughter, and I have a countdown clock for when she turns 12 and a half. And then
do you think she's not going to hate you? She's going to hate her mom. That's what she's
I thought
hate.
They hated everybody.
No,
I need more clarification.
They love their dads.
Oh, good. So we win, potentially.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
dads
good.
Dads win.
Oh, good.
With girls. Dads win with boys.
I hope that's what happens.
No, she'll always love it.
Because they're so sweet. At age 6, they're so sweet,
I've got a 6 and a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And No, it's unbelievable. The love is unbelievable.
It really is. It's complete adoration.
Yes, it is.
That's
why
you
gotta stay her friend. That's all you gotta do is stay her friend. That's what when kids get to be 12,
right?
Just be a friend. You're not a parent anymore. Nobody's their parent anymore. You can try to be their friend and try to stay close.
Steer them out of the way. Steer them out of trouble.
Yeah, you want them to be able to call you when there is a dead body and a bloody knife. You want them to be able to call, not be afraid. Dad. Yeah. And you go, tell me where you are. I'll come pick
Dad,
you up.
Dad, I'm hammered. Should I get in the car? Yes. No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or Dad, I got hammered. I'm in the car.
Well, usually when comedians start talking about their kids, usually it's bad. With you, it's been an asset. Like in your online special, you have a whole bit about this one kid in your daughter's class who you hate.
Yeah, Jazam the Puss, yeah.
He had to use a pseudonym for it. And I love that because I can neither confirm nor deny that there's been kids in one of my kids' classes that I hated. And it really is funny. You have this irrational hatred for this little kid who can't help themselves and is not who they're going to be 15
I can't
years
take
from
it.
Now.
I can't take it. Yeah. When there's a little boy and he just has isn't controlling his body and he's just got this nasty look on his face.
Yeah.
I really want to, like, I'm like, I swear if this were a different culture and there were no laws, I'd probably kill a couple of little boys. I'm probably stopped by law and crime and punishment law.
Be a bad career move.
From at least punching one of those kids right in the head. Like, if I just lived in a different country or at a different time when it was acceptable to really punch a kid hard in the face.
Smack him.
I mean, a kid that's not mine.
Yeah.
I would never hit my own kid. I think it's stupid. I just think it's a failure of parenting policy. That's all.
But
I would kid another. I would hit another kid like that. I probably not, and I wouldn't think it was a good idea. I think I wouldn't be able to control myself. I'm held under control by the threat of jail and life ruination.
Good
it would
threats.
Be a pretty bad move. I mean, and I'm saying this because I've pondered it. I've stood in the schoolyard looking at a kid and thought through how bad would my life get if I walked over and just kicked him with everything I have. Just kick him from behind so he doesn't even have...
In the butt.
Just, no, like in his full... Like my leg takes his whole full back. Like take his spine, shift his spine like an inch forward in his inside of his body.
What about like youth soccer and that whole world? I mean... Do your kids play
sport? My kids don't play. Well, my oldest plays soccer in school. They have soccer once a week, and I had my little one in soccer class where they sort of do soccer exercises.
Because that's fertile ground.
But the boys in the class, it was a co-ed, and the boys in the class were punching her and stuff.
Yeah.
What's the point of taking her if this kid's punching her? So I didn't do it anymore. But I hope they do. Sports is really good for kids.
It's fertile ground with the whole parent situation and some of the stuff that people yelling at the refs. And
yeah, people get...
It gets really weird pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was going to happen until, 12, 13.
Your kids play sport? You have one kid?
I have two, but my daughter was playing soccer this whole fall, and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a whole culture, right?
It really is, yeah.
Yes.
Stuff's going on. It's only going to get weirder, I feel like, too.
Oh, of course it will.
Yeah.
Of course it will.
The coaches who you're not supposed to play goalie, and you have these coaches who think they're like the Phil Jackson of soccer coaches, keeping the one kid back. It's like, no, you're not supposed to do this. These kids are six.
Right, they're not supposed to have goalies at all.
No,
right?
Everybody's supposed to be over midfield. Girls are cheating back. It's like, what are we keeping score?
That's crazy.
But it is pretty nuts. So,
I never did,
now that you have this special, now you're on to a new hour.
Yeah, I'm done.
Or you
with
need
that
a new
stuff.
Hour.
Yeah, I've got a little notebook with a few jokes in it.
What's your process? I was always curious to know that. Do you go to
do
you have to be outdoors? Do you have to be in your house?
The hardest thing is, for writing, I don't really sit and write down stuff. I just, stuff collects in my head and I try to write it down and remember it. I usually don't write much down. I write now more than I used to. I never used to write anything down when I was just a comic, but now I got way too much to do. If I have an idea, I'm likely to forget it, and I'm older now. So I write it in a little notebook, just a word. I don't write it out.
Oh, to go back later and be like,
Yeah, I never write stuff out because I think it uses a different part of your brain to write.
Well, how do you do the TV show then? What's your writing process for that?
Yeah, the scripts I write for the TV show.
Yeah.
Stand-up.
But where are you doing that? Are you like in an office? Or are you at like?
I have in my home. I have it's the living room for me and my kids. Yeah. But it's my office. It's my happy place, and I've got a big old desk. It's all, I moved recently, so this is all kind of new. But I've always had a desk, a place to sit in.
Did you buy the $17 million house?
What?
From that episode?
No.
That was,
I didn't
you didn't
got
get
that,
that
kind
one?
Of money, man. No, I don't have that kind of money. But I rent a nicer place than we used to have, a bigger place than we used to have.
Yeah.
And I have a big old kind of office, you know, turn-of-the-century desk, and I've got nice couch. So I
do you
sit
have
and
a,
I write. I have a typewriter I write on sometimes. Sometimes I write on...
A typewriter?
Sometimes. I like writing on a typewriter.
Old school.
Yeah. That's good.
Do you get, like, a pipe or something? Like...
Like
hat,
no, no
fedora?
Pipe. No, none of that. Just a typewriter.
Who's your sounding board for the show? Do you have anybody bounce stuff off?
Pamela's given me a lot of that. Pamela's, I'll tell her stuff and she'll help me think it through. Tell me if she's just silent, then I just drop it. There's been a few things where I know it's good and I know she'll hate it, so I just don't tell her about it.
Yeah.
And then she'll see it and she'll go, that was good. And I can tell she doesn't really like it. You know? So I know what to bring to her that she'll make for
right.
me. And so I have a few other friends like that I'll run stuff by, but mostly not. Mostly I do it myself. Mostly, most of the work I just spit it out and give it to my producer and start working on it. But for me, sort of the sounding board is in producing it.
Yeah.
Sometimes stuff dies. Like, I'll cast it. They go and get a bunch of people on video, and I watch videos of people reading the scene. That's how I cast it. I don't ever go to the casting sessions. And sometimes nobody good reads it, and I realize in watching the casting, this is a piece of shit. I'm not making this thing.
Yeah.
And I'll just drop it.
Was that, I read some interview with you where you were saying about season two. There was one episode that you liked pieces of it, but you didn't like it. I think it was the one with you had the meeting, you had the pitch meeting in it, and then it ended with the executive, which actually happened to you, and she ditched you.
Yeah, I didn't like the way that came out at all.
You liked all the pieces, but you didn't like how it came together.
Yeah, I liked the meeting. I liked the roundtable rewrite.
Yeah.
I enjoyed writing that because of the kind of people that go to those, and it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I think I went off the rails with that one because I'm sitting there talking to this woman who's sort of talking to me about my dreams to make movies. I don't think anyone gives a shit that I've dreamed to make movies.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a compelling part of what I do on the show. And getting led astray by an executive, what is that? That's such a non-experience. I just don't think it mattered. I think we did it good and the woman was really good, but there was no point to it, you know? So I tried not to air it. And I had a couple.
You tried not to air it?
Yeah, I didn't want to air it.
It was a good. It was a good episode. It was disjointed, but it had good pieces.
I would have liked to have replaced it with something else.
And
there's stuff that I haven't aired that just didn't make it.
How much?
Wasn't good. Well, some of it is on the DVD from the first season. I just dumped there. I think there's one or two things I held back completely. Like no one's ever seen this. But yeah, I always have stuff I don't air because you can't. You have to be able to try stuff and have it not work and then not show it. You know, that way you get more exciting stuff if you try stuff that's not likely to work.
You did that with your comedy too, right? You threw stuff on YouTube just to see what the reaction would be.
Yeah, I used to
stuff you were working on
all the time. Anything that I was doing that didn't feel like it was going to gel into a great bit or I wasn't sure of, I'd throw it on YouTube. And a lot of that stuff is in the series when I shoot the stand up. If I do anything that's just off the cuff, that's just odd. And gets a tiny laugh, I put on the show. Because it's probably not going to be like a big piece of material.
I still can't figure out why you're editing this, though. That just seems like...
Somebody asked me about this recently, and the way I explained it that makes sense to me is that me not editing it would be like taking a pile of... Being a sculptor and taking a pile of clay to some young assistant and saying, go make a nice thing of a lady. And then taking a walk. I mean, it's part of the job. It's just part of the work.
But it's real.
Putting it together.
It's grunt work, though.
It's not. It's art. I mean, editing is, I mean, you know.
But I know you have to be in there, but to do it, you're doing it yourself, though, right?
Yeah.
Usually people do it with that second person.
Sitting behind a guy and going, can you take a little off of that? And he's sitting there picking on my chest.
Dude. So you just got tired of it.
Yeah. I go crazy. I need to just be able to.
Because that was when I was working. I worked for Kimmel Show for 18 months, and I loved editing segments. It was actually reminded me of writing a column because you have this chunk of things, and then you're like, crap, that's too long. What do I cut? Boom, yeah. Boom. Ooh, I'm down at this length. Nah, it feels like that should be 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm at 4:40, right? It was fun.
It is, and a lot of times you find great moments in editing. You can create laughs that weren't there.
Yep.
And you see stuff that people did. You go, I didn't even notice him doing that when we were shooting it. And you put it in. And sometimes you change the whole story with editing. You completely change it. And it's and also, to me, it's like laying down. It's musical, you know? Like, I put down some music, and then I lay the shots end to end and start getting a feeling for what the thing feels like. When I had an editor that I worked with, and he was the guy, Doug Abel, he was a great guy. He was one of the best. And but he would form it in a certain way, and I'd try to go through it, and all these decisions were already made, and I would feel like I couldn't deal with it.
Right, because so they give you that little rough cut ahead of time.
Now they give me the shots, and I just sit there, and I just start putting it together.
But did you have to learn how to? I mean, I always watch his editors, and I would always be like, "How are they doing all this stuff?"
I taught myself how to do that years ago. Everything that I love, every part of making movies and TV. So everything I teach myself. I learned that by sitting behind editors for years and asking them everything they're doing, and then once Apple started making computers that could edit video.
Right.
I mean, that changed so many things for me. And I got that. I got a computer with Final Cut Pro on it. Now, unfortunately, they're going to stop doing that, I think, Apple. They don't care anymore because they sell these iPads and shit. So,
yeah, they're trying to make it easier.
Professional equipment, they're going to not.
I predict for like season 4, you're going to be somehow filming the show with cameras, with like little electronic. You're moving the cameras yourself with your hands.
Well,
cameraman.
It's all my own stuff. I buy the equipment so that it's mine, and I have it, and I can use it for other stuff if I want to. And that's part of how the show pays off for me. I now have an incredible collection of lenses, really good movie lenses,
right?
And I shoot my show on them. But if I want to make a movie, I have everything I need.
So do you feel like now you've had so much autonomy and you've enjoyed it so much that it would be hard to be in somebody else's thing?
Yeah, it would be a nightmare. It would be hard. I used to want to be a movie director, and I could probably get a job directing a movie now.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would be a job that I'd want. I'd be an entry-level director at some studio. And I'd have to work under their, you know, it would be really painful.
No, but wait, though,
you
could write an indie movie and direct it yourself and do it that way.
Yeah, and now the other thing is that writing movies is the hardest thing I've ever tried to do.
Yeah.
And writing movies, it's just so brutal to get. It's so difficult. I don't know if I can do it. I think that's my Peter principle or whatever they call it. I think movies is probably, it's a dumb thing to say out loud, but I don't know if I'm good at that. I think I could direct the shit out of a movie.
Yeah.
But writing one is really, really hard.
Do you feel like you're getting all this stuff thrown at you now? Like, it's hard. You can see how people would get, I don't think it'll happen to you, but some people get spread. Oh, I'll do that. All of a sudden you're spread thin.
Yes. And you gotta not do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been offered stuff that I would have taken in the past because of exciting opportunities.
Yeah.
And I've said, no, I have plenty to do. The thing that makes that is a huge asset for a comedian is that you sell tickets on the road. You don't have to ask anybody for that job. You know, you don't have to interview for it. If you sell tickets, you get the work. And at this level, because of the doing a different hour every week, that's given me a huge ability to sell tickets. When you do the same hour every year, people come see you on tour. And then the next time they go, oh, here he comes again. And then they see you on tour.
One,
Third time they're like, I seen it. They see the same show twice. Why would they come again? Why? But every time people see me on the road, it's a completely different show. And they go, I can't believe he keeps changing it. So they come. They're always there. So there's a lot of cities in America where I sell mad tickets. And that pays way more than movies or comedians that do theaters.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at my level, I'm like, you know, 18 to 3,600 seat theaters. That's kind of my range. And that pays way more than most movie actors.
Yeah.
Most movie actors, except for the elite ones that get like $16 million for a movie. And still, they have to spend a whole year making it and then promoting it. It's a lot of work that they're giving. So I make enough on the road that it wouldn't make any sense financially for me to go make a movie
Well, also, you keep a schedule because you're kids, right? You have to.
Yeah, that's the other thing is I won't come out here and spend a month out here shooting a movie. I won't do it.
Yeah.
The only way I would do it is if, like, you know, Martin Scorsese or somebody like that said, you know, you're going to be the next guy in one of my movies. Then I'd figure out, I'd go,
I'm making
I'd
good go
have
fellas
a coffee
too.
With my ex-wife, and I'd say, listen, we got to figure out a way for me to do this without losing too much time with the kids.
Right.
But I wouldn't just come out here and be in some funny comedy because I'm with my kids 3 days a week, and that's a hard and fast. That's an important thing to me. So, and they're counting on that. They expect it.
Yeah.
And they're counting on it. And just for me, it's not okay to me to say, you're not going to see your dad this week because I'm going to work. It happens occasionally, but I work out the schedule with their mom so I can still see them.
Hmm.
Because when you're married, if you leave the house, it's still the kids are in your house. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But when you're divorced, if the kids aren't with you, they're not even in your home. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you're not as much of a presence for them.
Yeah.
So it's, and also they just, I love being with them and I'm part of their stability. So I just make it a rule. It's like when I heard about Joe Lieberman, that he's a senator, but he doesn't work on Fridays or whatever the day is. The Jews don't work. Sandy Koufax, there's guys that are always, you know, they say, I just don't do it. You just can't make me do it because it's important to me. And everybody goes, that's crazy. But then they work around it. So that's what I did with this. I told my agent, when I go on the road, I don't leave New York City till I've dropped my kids at school on Wednesdays. Then I can go on the road. And I have to be back on half the Saturdays a month. That's a lot of Saturdays. That's a lot of stand-up gigs I could be doing Saturdays.
And you've shut down the shooting for the day on Louis.
Yeah, on Louis I only shoot Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't shoot on any Monday or Tuesday.
You're a better dad than I am, I gotta say.
Well, I'm pulling it off because I decided at some point that kids come before work. I just decided that because I have to. Are you married?
I'm married.
Yeah, so it's different. You can tag team. You've got two people.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think of it that way.
That's the whole reason. When I got divorced and I had my kids with me on half the week, I thought, I got to make this work. I mean, this is just me and them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get a nanny to watch them on my custody time. That makes they'd be better off with their mom. Why would I do that? So I thought, how am I going to handle this? It used to be I just did whatever people asked me to do. And
yeah.
I thought, okay, I have to make a choice. I have to decide which one beats, who gets the tie break. And I decided the kids. And so when I get a call from somebody saying, do you want to do this? And it's on kid time. I say, I can't. I just can't. Doesn't matter how cool a gig it is. I can't do it.
So that's why you would never host a late night show or do any
never.
Of that stuff. Yeah.
I would never do it.
Wouldn't do it anyway, though, right? Would you want to host a late night show?
I used to think that would be kind of a cool job, but now I wouldn't do it.
That's what we grew up with. We thought,
yeah, thought it was cool.
But now,
I wrote at one of those shows. It's too hard. I think it's a younger guy's thing.
Which way? You wrote on Letterman, right?
44 years old.
Yeah.
I wrote on Conan and Letterman.
Yeah. It just seems like it's a grind. I mean, I know from the 18 months I spent, like,
it's too hard. Yeah, it's fun. When you're young, it's fun. You're just trying all kinds of stuff.
When is season 3 coming?
June. Last Thursday in June is the first one.
All right. And if you want to get the special.
Yeah.
LewisCK.com.
.com or .net.
Or .net. Now you have the .com. $5.
PayPal. You don't have to join PayPal. A lot of people are a little bummed out about pay, like they don't want to join.
Oh, please. If you have eBay, you're on PayPal.
That's right.
PayPal's not intimidating.
$5, we leave you alone.
That's
an opt-out button, and it's clicked opt-out, like for emails. Like, we start you at opt-out.
I got signed up for all this porn, like, about 2 hours later. It might have been your fault. No, it's really good. I mean, if you are listening to this, you like our guests. So
yeah.
I would recommend the
right
special.
Now, you can go to LewisCK.com and buy it. You can also gift it to other people. There's a new thing on there where you can send gifts of it to other people, and they'll get a nice little thing in the email.
How many have you sold? Do you know?
Yeah, sure I know. I
mean, do you want to say? It's not like bragging, or I don't know.
No, I already said on the website how much I had sold. I wasn't going to. I was worried it would feel like bragging, or, you know.
A little bit of a humble brag.
And I asked my mom, and my mom said, tell everybody and tell them right now. Because people got so invested in it.
Yeah.
I have people writing me emails saying, I don't even like your comedy, and I'm buying this because it's cool how you did it. People really got excited by it, and they wanted to see if it would work or not. people wanted to know if other people were like them, that other people that didn't download it, who would have.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. So I thought, I don't own this thing anymore. It's bigger than me. You know, like a bunch of people are interested. So even if it doesn't help me, I should tell them. It's all so fun. It's such a cool thing to be part of. So I put the numbers out there. But right now, I think the last time I have a BlackBerry, and I get every 15 minutes, I get sales reports, which I have to get turned off because it's a little bit obsessing.
So you got a little competitive.
Well, it's interesting to watch it go up and down. Like, it's interesting to watch the sales trends. I'm curious about everything.
Like at midnight, it starts spiking for some
reason? Well, no, it does. Like around 1 or 2, it starts to go down. And then, but it keeps coming. Like, it trickles out. Like, the first day we went on sale, we were selling 5,000 copies an hour.
Whoa.
Like, all day. Just $20,000 an hour. Just bang, bang.
Wow.
It just kept coming. It was crazy. I was sitting in a stall of LAX bathroom on my way home, and I'm looking at my phone, and it keeps ringing up, and I started laughing. I was like, this is nuts. Like, I started giggling like the guy from Marathon Man when he gets all the Nazi.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
to compare myself to a Nazi. But when he finds all the diamonds, he just starts giggling. I was like, this is crazy. But so then it slowed down after one day.
Yeah.
But we hit 50,000 sales in one day. And then we hit 100,000 sales in 3 days. And now it's at a 160, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's $5 each.
And when does the season 2 DVD come out?
Right when the season 3 starts. They always do it at the same time.
So what's that date?
June.
Beautiful.
Late June.
Anything else we need to plug? Dates, anything?
No, man. Just buy that special, please. I'm going to go on the road probably in the fall, and I'll sell the tickets on my website if I can. I'm going to figure out if I can.
All right. Congrats on everything. You're an inspiration. Seriously.
Oh,
I love
you.
The fact that you've cut out everybody, basically. You're just doing your thing.
Well, to me, it's just being direct. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's good.
I wouldn't cut out anybody who I need. I don't cut out everybody. I have Blair Briard, who produces my show and produces the special. She makes everything possible.
And you have your agent.
I have my
FX
agent,
guys.
Mike Berkowitz,
nice.
That books me, and Dave Becky's my manager. These are all great guys. John Landgraf gives me that show as a gift. I have a director of photography, Paul Kessner, who I've worked with since I was a kid, and who taught me how to make movies, and he's still with me. Amy Silver, my production designer, makes everything look cool. I don't have any control over this shit. I just don't have anybody controlling me. That's the way I look at it. I don't need to control stuff. I can't. I like just being there and watching this stuff happen. I kind of create the opportunity and see what happens. That's the way I feel about the show. But nobody's making me do anything. I do like that.
Good. And I like that you're taking chances, though.
Yeah,
keep taking the chances.
It's more fun. It's more fun if you might lose. It's way more fun.
I don't know how we got through this whole thing without talking about Boston, but maybe we'll have to do it another time.
All right, we'll talk about
Boston
save them
next
time.
Yeah. All right.
Go
so,
Red Sox.
LewisCK.com and .net, but more importantly, .com. Lewis with an S.
.com.
$5 comedy special coming up. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.